Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello and welcome along to Press X to continue. Now, whether you're in the Continue Club, whether you're a Press Xer, or whether you're an Xy beast, you're all very welcome. So sit back and relax as we get stuck into another episode. This is the gaming podcast that has all of your needs covered. It's perfect if you're someone who plays every night of the week, or if you're a casual player maybe, or someone who just likes to watch from the sidelines with friends and family. All of that is cool too, okay? My name is Stefan Powell, and once again, I'm joined by the actor, comedian, and good egg, Einel Tomlinson. Hello, Einel.
Hello, hello. I love how you gave all the listeners equal emphasis there. That was very good.
Very good, yeah. We're not going to get caught. We're not going to get bogged down in admin this time like we did last time.
That's why I said it was equal.
Just noted it and moved on. I like it. Yeah. Thank you very much. Very good, very good. Now, we've also got our brand new tradition at the start of every episode of the rebooted Press X to continue. That is, we start every episode with an unpopular opinion. And so we're giving the floor this episode to our first guest on today's show, who is the Guardian's video games editor, Keza MacDonald. Hello and welcome along, Keza.
Hello, good afternoon. Happy New Year, I guess.
Yeah, we can still say that.
Are we saying that? Are we situating this podcast in time?
What's the date? It's start of January 2025, so there we are. Keza, it does feel a bit unfair to throw you sort of to the wolves in this way, but I think it's kind of fun. So what is your gaming unpopular opinion, please?
Oh, don't worry, I'm ready. I have so many of these. I've had to select from a short list. So I think the one I'm gonna present to you guys today is this: you should not be able to skip cutscenes.
Oh yes, spicy! Like, I like it.
People worked hard on those. People worked hard. The actors worked hard. The script writers worked hard.
Before you give it the big sell, I want to get Glenn Moore's instant reaction. Glenn Moore's with us today. Your first up impression of before she's explained herself of that unpopular opinion.
I think I'm with you on that. I think that is absolutely worthwhile. It's a necessary part of the story. I know someone who couldn't get their head around why The Last of Us Part 2 was popular and they skipped all the cutscenes. Separate to this, this should also inform you about the person we're talking about. This is a person who prefers the modern day sections of Assassin's Creed games and not the bit set in the past. So already this person
is that a friend of yours?
Not anymore. But I'm with you. I'm fully with you on that. Fully with you on that.
Okay, Keza, let's dive into this a little bit more. Surely it should be player choice, right? Whether or not they want to experience this cutscene, they want to crack. It's a game they're playing, right? Not watching a movie.
It should be developer choice, I reckon. And I think all developers, if they're bothering to write, perform, do you know how much these things cost? I'm sure we've all seen the footage of, you know, this actor or that actor with a bunch of bubbles on in a full motion video studio. This is some of the greatest outlay in the making of a game, is the putting together of cutscenes, not just the conceptualizing and the writing and hiring the actors, just all of it costs a fortune. The technical side of it is also just incredibly impressive. And I think that if a developer has gone to the trouble of all that, even if dialogue's not that great, even if the story's far from the best thing about the game, you should have some respect and just sit through the 90-second cutscene. Just sit through it.
I think there should be a slight caveat to this. I think, because sometimes games crash, or sometimes you have a boss that has a cutscene that plays at the beginning of it, and you cannot, if you can't skip that, that'd be enraging. I think it should let you skip, but you should have to answer a trivia question about the cutscene. It should go, all right.
Watched it at least
what colours is tunic then? And you go, blue. I've seen it a billion times, it's blue. I think you should have to do that. The only game in which I'm very glad I skipped all the cutscenes was Neon White, that speedrunning vampire game a couple of years ago, in which I loved the gameplay and couldn't have had less of an interest in the story. But that wasn't like an animated mocap cutscene, that was just written dialogue. And I was quite happy skipping all of that because it was either that or I wasn't going to play the game.
I love a cutscene. I was one of those that enjoyed the Metal Gear Solid cutscenes, right? I get into
the 90-minute ones.
The super long ones when your gran's like, can we go home now? And like, no, we can't because I need to finish this cutscene. And my brother-in-law's the one with the PlayStation, not me. So we are staying here until I've finished this cutscene. But I do think that developers, at the same token, the same time as this, should pay a bit more heed to pacing. Because I will say the games that get the best cutscenes for me are the ones that get their pacing right. Some of them can be snappier and others can dwell a bit longer. But you shouldn't be sitting through a cutscene that's longer than, I don't know, 5-6 minutes?
I think that it's an incentive for developers to just do better cutscenes.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, no one can skip them. It's the law now. Nobody can skip them. You better make it good. You better make it worth your player's time. So watch. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've sat through some truly dire cutscenes in my time.
Did you play Immortals of Avium as well?
Oh, wow. My God, I'd forgotten about that.
Two occasions in that game, someone makes a quippy remark and goes, he's standing right behind me, isn't he? It's like, oh, my God.
No, thank you. Yeah. No. I also, because this reminds me, there's a newer trend in games which I find much more annoying than an unskippable cutscene, which is the constant banter of, like, you're walking around in an RPG and everybody's like quipping, or people are kind of throwing the latest Dragon Age is like this. People are just throwing
filling
little
the air.
Observation. Yeah, and it's like that. I would skip. I want to be able to turn that off.
They should. Mm. They should learn from Pulp Fiction, which, you know, that famous line, didn't it? You know you found someone special when you can share a comfortable silence. Games should allow you to share a comfortable silence in their experience. Einel, you know, you're a performer yourself, right? So I imagine you're on Kez's side here, but what game had the best cutscenes?
Oh, that's put me on the spot. The best cutscene? I think I would have to say, just in terms of the art direction, the cinematography, and the acting, I'd have to say Final Fantasy VII Rebirth just most recently. I just loved how those cutscenes were relayed. Like, I was like, oh, this is like a movie. I very much enjoyed them. They're skippable as well, which is great. I think it's definitely a more modern thing because, like, I've went back and started playing some older titles. I played Ratchet and Clank, the first one. You can't skip any of the cutscenes in that. You can press start, you can press any buttons, don't let you skip.
You can
none
scream
of
them. Into the controller.
You have to watch every single cutscene. And I was like, oh, there you go. Keza would love that.
Yeah. Well, look, let us know what you think of Kez's unpopular opinion. Get in touch with us on our social media and get in the Discord as well. We love hearing from you on there. If you're interested in motion capture, by the way, Owen, who works on the podcast, has got a motion capture studio up in Leeds called Goblin Academy, just set up. And the whole point of the studio is to help people get into mocap and learn how to use it and stuff. So go and find the Goblin Academy on social media and you can learn loads more about mocap and stuff there. It's really fascinating. I love going to studios and seeing the mock-up space. I know once you've seen one, you've seen them all, but this, I just think it's just all the little buttons and like little things you stick on yourself. And if you ever get a chance to put yourself in mock-up and you're watching yourself move, and then there's like an avatar of you moving, that never gets old, I don't think.
And one ever looks good in a mock-up.
Yeah, it's the great leveler, isn't it? You can be any actor in the world. You could be Troy Baker. You could be, you're always going to look equally ridiculous in a mocap suit.
Yeah. I think, we talked a little bit Last of Us 2 in this conversation. That had amazing cutscenes, though, didn't it? To be fair, it had some really, really moving cutscenes.
The faces. It's the faces that I remember from The Last of Us 2. There are lots of quite subtle moments that, because obviously video games and subtlety for a long time were not friends.
Yeah.
But now that there's enough, like, it was the visual fidelity, wasn't it? The micro expressions, the way that everybody's faces were captured, that's what really stood out to me about those scenes in The Last of Us 2.
I'd argue that probably the best video game cutscene is the trailer for Intergalactic, Naughty Dog's new one. Just in terms of like the visual quality, in which if you are looking at it from a distance, you're like, that could be real.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting when that comes out. Right, now, we had this one in from our Discord as well. Hexana got in touch. She said, hear me out, her unpopular opinion, racing games are too fast, right? She says, think back to the early Gran Turismos. You'd start off in slower cars in like a Class C and then work your way up to a Class A, then a Class S. But by then, it's not about being, it is about being fast, but winning in the slower classes was more like playing chess. More strategic and not just a drag race. So racing games are too fast. Interesting.
I agree to a certain extent. I do like how when playing Gran Turismo 7, the most recent one, you have to kind of start off in the hatchbacks and stuff. And it gets you used to kind of the controls, learning the courses. And a lot of the time, a lot of those, I guess, simulation races are about learning the tracks and learning how to take corners, learning how to brake at the apexes and things. And so, yeah, I tend to agree there. Some of them are a bit too fast, but I do like my F-Zeros, though.
I think there's a limit to... There's got to be a balance between speed and what your mind can take in, reaction-wise. And so as much as I loved going at like 200 miles an hour in Forza Horizon, there will be a rock or tree at some point that I won't see quickly enough. And that... The deflation you feel when you get cut off like that really, really annoys you in a way that it wouldn't have done if you were doing like 70 and had a bit more of a measured aim of where you were going.
I think Need for Speed changed it, didn't it? Because that was the sort of the title that moved it away from, or one of the titles that moved it away from that sort of semi, well, frankly, quite realistic stuff that Gran Turismo was doing into that more sort of, then Burnout came along.
Burnout was the speed freak game. Because it was the motion blur.
Yeah,
I was the first
didn't
game
have to
I
break
remember.
In that game.
Yeah, right. I don't think Burnout knew the damage they did to racing games. It was like Boris Johnson. Have I got news for you? Fun at the time, but little did they know the devastation it would cause historically years later.
Damn you, Criterion Games.
Well, look, we want you to get involved. Okay, so we've already heard what is being talked about in the Discord. We've already heard what Kez's unpopular opinion is, but do come along and get involved. Okay, so say hello. You can meet the team as well that are behind the podcast. You can send us messages in there, and we often talk about what's being chatted about in the Discord here on the podcast as well. Also find us on social media. So it's Press X Pod on TikTok and Blue Sky, and Press X Podcast on Instagram. Nailed it. Yes. Thank you. Get there. Learned it. Very good. Right. So here's something to kick us off. It's a bit different to what we've done before. I mean, who doesn't like quizzes? Right. Everybody loves a quiz. So I'm going to throw this one at you. Okay. And I'll give you the answer the end of the episode, right? So in what year was the first video game played in space? And for a bonus point, I'd like you to tell me what the game was. So what year?
I know this.
No, wait. If someone in this panel knows it, Kez, I hope it was you.
I'll keep it quiet.
We'll come back to the answer at the end. So... what year was the first video game played in space, and what was the game? We'll have the answer at the end of the show. And if you've got any fun games trivia you want to put forward for us to try and guess here on the show, then message our producer David, who's in the Discord. Find him in there, and do it privately, obviously, because we don't want everybody to know what the question and the answer is.
I can see Glenn googling right now.
I'm plugging my laptop in because it's about to die. I do not have access to the technology that NASA people do.
I can see it in his glasses. You can't play that.
I'm not playing a game at all. I couldn't tell you in a million years what game it is. I would love it if it's something like Crusader Kings 3 and they were like, yeah, we just had hundreds of hours spare every day. What else am I meant to do in space?
Probably.
Yeah. Could be. Side note, I loved Crusader Kings. Anyway, really hard amazing. If you try playing as Wales in Crusader Kings, by the way. It's really difficult. Right then, so we're going to talk about this one now. The Rolling Stone magazine have released their list of the top 50 video games of all time. So they looked at how influential each game was when it came out and if it still holds up today and how much it shaped the culture. And so we've picked out some key positions on the list just for us to have a little chat about and sort of reflect on their list. Because it's hard putting lists like this together, isn't it? It's an impossible task. And they've braved it, Ainel, haven't they? Because, you know...
How many people were in the committee for this one? Yeah. Kind of put this list together.
Yeah,
I bet there was arguments in this one.
I've had the pleasure / displeasure of putting together these kinds of lists at several different places now. When we were doing it at IGN, my goodness, 30 people, everyone had an opinion. And it was much harder than doing it at The Guardian, where it's basically just me. imposing my will.
Was it a case of too many cooks, you know, because actually everybody's got an opinion, haven't they?
Well, I mean, especially with lists, because people just love to argue about a list, right? So I actually think smaller is better when it comes to committees like this. And I remember once on a Guardian Games of the Year list, somebody got in touch, someone commented, and they're like, what's the criteria for this? You need to explain the criteria because this list doesn't make any sense. I'm like, the criteria are that I decided it.
That's it.
Here's the secret. That's the criteria for every list. It's just someone decided it. That's what it is. Like the idea that there's an objectivity around it is quite funny to me.
I'll just throw some of the games that were sort of in the top 50 out there and we'll discuss the top five. So Fortnite came in 45th. Wii Sports was 30th, Minecraft 28th, Mario Kart 64 20th, Metal Gear Solid 7th, but the top five, in 5th, The Last of Us, the first one, in 4th, Super Mario World 1991, in 3rd was Grand Theft Auto 5, 2nd was Tetris, and 1st, I think controversially,
The Legend of... I agree with it though.
Do you?
I agree.
The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, came in first.
Best game of all time, my friend.
There we go.
Can't argue with that. I can argue with almost every other thing on that list.
I'm with Kevin
on this. It's a safe list. I would describe it as a frightened list. And the person is like, I'm so keen not to upset anyone. I've put the 50 biggest games ever in. That's basically what it is. If there's a famous game you can think of, whatever the most famous game you can think of is, it's on that list.
Yeah,
there are some glaring omissions though.
Before
we get on to omissions,
not fame wise, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's a lot of games you've heard of, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a lot of, which is you've heard of them for a reason, I suppose. It's like I know the name Moonlight, that movie that won the Oscar just because it's won an Oscar. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you just know things because they're in the space. You think that Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, as good as a game as was, had more of an impact than some of the other ones out here? Like, I don't
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
GTA 5.
Yeah.
Or, yep.
It's better. It's better than GTA 5.
GTA 5 is inarguably absolutely massive, but I don't think it innovated as much as GTA 3, really, or Vice City. It was. I felt GTA 5 was more of the same. In fact, GTA San Andreas, which was also set in the same area and had Los Santos in, was at least a whole state with three cities in. GTA 5 is big, but it doesn't feel bigger than the other GTAs. It didn't do anything differently, I don't think.
And bigger doesn't always mean better, I suppose, either. What were your glaring omissions then, Keza?
All right, so it will surprise nobody who knows much about my work that I was appalled to see no Dark Souls in the top 50 video games. No Dark Souls in the top 50? Mm-hmm. Because that would be a contender for number one for me. I mean, I literally wrote the book on Dark Souls, so it's very close to my heart.
Yeah.
But which, I do think, you know,
forget,
I understand why some people
I have
are
it in my hand right now.
Like, this was written in the stars. Copy of my book.
Yeah, just before we started recording, Glenn whips out a copy of Keza's book.
I was tidying up my room today, and sure enough, it was there in my room. I read it last year. I loved it. It's an excellent book.
Thank you.
Available from all good book retailers and some bad ones as well, Keza, no doubt. So yeah, no Dark Souls, I suppose, is an omission. And Nell, do you think that Glenn's got a point that they played it safe here by just picking a lot of famous titles?
No, I know how difficult these lists are, as like Keza was saying earlier, and like they are very hard to come up with these lists. And then when you are basically people kind of think of their top 10 favorite games and then they just mishmash them together, and then you got 50 when you got a whole committee of people. And I think it's a good list. I think it's a good list. Like, I agree with the first one. Metal Gear's in there. I saw games like Shadow of the Colossus was in there. I'm happy with that. Like, Animal Crossing's in there. Great. The only omissions that I didn't see were there was no Donkey Kong games. And I was like, oh, like really love the Donkey Kong Country games, how they kind of rejuvenated the Super Nintendo back in the early 90s. How everybody started going over to that kind of graphical style with kind of with their games after seeing what Rare did with the Donkey Kong Country series. But other than that, I think the list is pretty good.
I think to be fair, it's a strong list, right? And if I've got a list that I had to make once, right, which I'll share some of it now, and you can all tear it to smithereens, right?
That's the fun, though.
This is the beauty of this. But my thought is, I think Breath of the Wild should probably be in the top 10. But if you're talking about a game that was sort of influential, right? I mean, look at the millions of people that play video games now as a result of Minecraft, for example, and that's down at 28. Now, is it a bit clunky? Is it a bit whatever? Yeah, fine. But like, if the criteria is like influence on popular culture and the game space, and surely titles like that need to be way higher. And as brilliant as Breath of the Wild is, we've seen it broadly speaking before. Not as well executed, maybe, or as beautiful, or not whatever. Handheld. But
I think it revolutionized. I think it revolutionized open world games. Yeah, like no open world game had ever actually delivered on the promise of you can do what you want here. Mm-hmm. It was always a false, like a hall of mirrors thing, whereas like the illusion of freedom in an open world game had been around for a while. But GTA 5 is a very good example of this. You couldn't really do what you wanted in GTA 5. You were quite hemmed in. You could shoot something, and that was about it. Mm-hmm. In terms of how you interacted with the world. But like Breath of the Wild was the first game where you could interact, pick up, throw around, put together, you know, you could interact with almost everything in the entire game. And the answer to what happens if I do this was always like, yeah, sure, try it. Why don't you go see? Rather than, makes sense. You can't actually do that.
Yeah.
No other game really before or since has ever had that like ultimate sense of genuinely you can do what you want in this game.
Red Dead 2? To an extent?
Close.
Is that not in the top 50?
It is. Red Dead 2 is 16. Yeah.
The biggest omission, I think, would be, for me, I agree on Dark Souls, although Elden Ring is on there, at least. So at least that's something. But if not Dark Souls, like personally, I'd want something like Stardew Valley. But I'm really surprised that Portal isn't on the top 50 at all.
Yeah,
that's a really good show. Yeah, Portal is one of those games that, again, it was unique at the time, and it was so good that nobody's ever really managed to do it again or improve upon it. It arrived in this world perfect and then was never iterated upon.
My omission, I think it's an omission, having seen it, but now I'm second guessing myself slightly. But I you might disagree with this, but I think that that Football Manager deserves to be on a top 50 games of all time.
A big lack of sports games,
right? Game essentially turned a spreadsheet into a multi-million selling. You know talk about defining culture. You hear about people in real, you know, places that wouldn't normally refer to or talk about their love of video games, talking about their obsession with then Championship Manager, which you could have named one of those older ones, or the new Football Manager. I don't think it was in the top 50, unless I missed it. If so, I apologize. But it wasn't in there, was it?
Listen, to this day, I've never seen a modern video game come out with no music. Only Football Manager can do that. Only Football Manager can do that.
Is there music?
What game has got no music?
Is it
Limbo?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's got no music.
Only sound effects. Is Limbo on there? It should be on there too, actually, in a top 50. I don't think it's there.
Well, look, let us know what you think of the list, okay? Do you agree with the top five? Do you agree with number one? What would you argue that needs to be in there? DJ on our Discord, he says that Skyrim would always be in his top three. He's played it on three generations of PlayStations now. One time GQ put a list like this together, didn't they? And they asked a load of people to sort of contribute. I think some of us might have contributed to the list. I contributed, but this wasn't like... the greatest game of all time. It was my favourite, so it was cheating, really. But I had The Last of Us, The Witcher 3, Minecraft, Mario Kart 8, and Red Dead Redemption 2 was my top five. So feel free to disagree with me on that as well on our Discord and on social media. You can find us Press X Pod on Blue Sky and TikTok, Press X Podcast on Instagram, and there's a Discord as well, which we would love to see you in there. Now,
I remember...
No, did you do that as well?
Oh, no, I did for GQ. I can't remember what I put down now, but I do remember that about maybe 10 or 12 years ago, Charlie Brooker did a TV program with like the top 50 video games of all time, the most influential games.
Yeah.
And he put at number one, Twitter, which I thought was just the most amazing troll selection of anything. It was so good. And it got such a lot of discussion, but he put together a really very good argument for Twitter being a video game.
I mean, I do... There was a time when Twitter was lovely for people who liked games. There was a real community of people there, and you could find loads of cool stuff and find people out. Less so these days, anyway. One bit of news that we should also bring you is an interesting exhibit at CES 2025, which is basically like a trade show, right, where new technology is shown off. And Einel, you spoke in a recent episode about, you know, missing a trick with the Kinect and trying to do more with tech, with mics and cameras and stuff. Well, something from Sony at CES, right? They say a future gaming room could include LED panels, audio, haptics, but scent, an atmosphere, meaning you could smell your games.
Yeah, I'm down.
No.
I'm down.
No.
You down?
Yeah, listen, game for me would be Kirby's Dream Buffet. Because, like, I went to the Kirby restaurant in Japan, right? And it's amazing. And the scents and the smells and the taste is amazing. Oh, it's great. And so if you play that game and you see how gorgeous the food looks in it, yeah. Kirby's Dream Buffet, I'm there.
I honestly can't think of a single game I would like to smell.
I think in a really, like...
Monster Hunter world when they're cooking.
Yeah, but then you've got to have the good with the bad. You've got to have the good with the bad.
You got to smell the monsters.
In a really self-flagellating way, I'd want to go to the worst, but I'd want to go to somewhere in, like, Dark Souls. Also, I want to go in, like, the gutter, the depths, to go, what's the worst
you
something
smell?
Smell?
The charnel
because
house.
I feel like even places that you think would smell nice because they look edible, they look nice, would be horrible. Astrobot feels like that world would smell lovely, but it would just smell overwhelmingly of metal. It would be really metallic. You'd go in there and be like, oh, it looks really cutesy. Why does it smell of blood? It would be such a horrible place to be in.
Animal Crossing would smell nice.
Yeah.
Nature smells, I guess. But then also you can just go outside. Like, I don't really understand. Like, the only things that you would want to smell are things that you could feasibly in real life simply smell, such as...
Yeah,
you know, cut grass and like things that are cooking. All the things in games. Like, imagine the battle scenes in Monster Hunter. There's an awful lot of like excrement.
I think developers could get really creative though with the types of smells that you could like enhance environments with. It could put games on a whole nother level.
Do you remember there was a South Park game called The Fractured Hole?
Yeah.
Fractured Butthole. Obsidian, wasn't it? But didn't they make it?
That
had a little nose thing which made you smell all the... It did. I tried it. I can remember. I think it was an E3. They had a thing you put on your nose, and when Cartman farted or whatever, it would spray this stuff in, and it was the most vile thing. It was like really that synthetic, fake fart smell you used to buy from like a joke shop, you know, that fart smell.
When you were a kid. Sounds like the future of video games to me.
It was right in my face, of all the games
as well. South Park is predominantly set in a snowy place, and snow doesn't smell of anything. And also, considering the cast, they'd be like, hey, here's a game about a bunch of 10-year-old kids. Want to smell it? Like, what? No. What? No.
this was about 10 years ago. The world was a different place then, Glenn. Hey,
this is why I suggested Kirby and his lovely, cute restaurant.
So do you want to smell your video games? Sony clearly thinks you do. But let us know what you think. Find us on social media and get in the Discord as well. It is time now, of course, before we finish our news section, we need to find out what is going on with GTA 6. So let's have a listen to this and see what the latest is.
The Press X to continue GTA 6 update.
I'm just going to have to make stuff up at this point. Because there's no new... There's cars in this one.
That was the Press X to continue GTA 6 update.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Well, there we are. That's a big update on GTA 6. Thank you very much to Cammy for putting that one together for us. Right, let's have a bit of a review then. Let's talk about Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Now, normally we ask one of our guests to review a game, but because they both suggested the same title independently of each other, I'm going to hand it both over to Glenn and Keza about this one. Glenn, let's start with you. Are you enjoying Indiana Jones and the Great Circle?
Yeah, it's fantastic in a way that I didn't anticipate. It's excellent. It's for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, I'm going to assume familiarity with Indiana Jones as a concept, but this is a first-person action adventure which so fully nails what the films are about, the tone, the action, the discovery. And if you like any of the Indiana Jones films, and there's no reason why you dislike it, because it's so fully about the adventure, and there's such a diverse range of locations that you go to, and it's very cinematic. There's snowy mountains, jungles, a city, caves, tombs, and all of it. And I think what I really liked specifically about this game as just a good action game that's more stealth than action, which I think is quite surprising, is that it's really exciting to play a movie game that is more about the limitations rather than the strengths. If you play something like Spider-Man, you're there because you want to feel as fast and acrobatic as Spider-Man, and I think this can go the other way just as effectively. So for instance, Alien Isolation was amazing because it was about your limitations as a human being, and this is what Indiana Jones is about. You are just ultimately a human being, so it's not about firing loads of machine guns at Nazis like in the Wolfenstein games, which is what Machine Games is also famous for. It is about, well, this is kind of how you would have to deal with this situation of crouching behind things, using any weapon available to you, whether it's a toilet brush or a shovel or whatever. And that's actually more exciting as a game because it makes it feel a lot more sort of grounded, and that does make it feel more like you are in the films, because Indiana Jones rarely gets a machine gun out and kills a ton of people. It is all done very stealthily and all about disguises and that sort of thing, to the extent that actually, even though you can fire guns in this game, it deliberately doesn't feel nice. It felt like, I think I shot one Nazi in one desperate moment, and it really, like, the way he crumpled made me really almost sort of drop the controller of like, oh shit, I've got to call my mum, I've done something really bad. It's so rare to see a cinematic tie-in that really falls in love with the game as much as the people who are, falls in love with the movies as much as the people who play it. And that was just mainly what I was into.
Yeah. So Glenn clearly into it. Keza, were you loving it as much as he was?
So I have never intentionally watched an Indiana Jones movie from start to finish ever in my life.
You should have had that as your unpopular opinion.
It's not that I hate them. I just never happened to have watched an Indiana Jones movie. So I wasn't expecting to be drawn in by this particularly at all. And then I discovered that it was essentially archaeology Dishonored, which is splendid. Like, I mean, yeah, I'm totally here for that. So I also appreciate that it's kind of the opposite of a superhero game, and that at the end of the day, you're like a middle-aged guy, and you've got a whip that you can swing from. That's the kind of extent of his athletic abilities, really. But also what I thought was amazing about it was the sheer effort and detail that's gone into the places that Indy visits. It's not a linear game in that it's not like, okay, you go here, you shoot these guys, you turn this special secret key, you go through this, you know, there's the whole of the Vatican City is essentially just there. And it's the Vatican under Nazi occupation. And it's like a fascinating period of history to just sort of drop into. But then also what you're doing is sneaking into the Sistine Chapel and sneaking into like all these landmarks of the landmarks of the place and stealing stuff, just like going through people's drawers and breaking into safes and occasionally punching a Nazi, but mostly just stealing priceless things. And I was just really into it. I thought it was so fun. And the Sistine Chapel in the game is extraordinary. Like all of the art, all of the pictures, all the someone really loved doing all of the art in every single part of this game. And then the next place you go after the Vatican is the Pyramids of Giza, which is also just somewhere I've never been in real life, but I've always been fascinated by. And again, it's what really drew me in was how much like a place these scenarios feel, and how free you are to kind of just explore and find stuff, find tombs, or find villages, find letters, find, you know, you can uncover little Nazi schemes and plots and help people out. And I just thought it was going to be a kind of Uncharted-alike action game. And what it is instead is this really immersive adventure game. And I thought it was just wonderful. I was really surprised by it.
How long are we talking? What are we talking?
It's up to you. Because I'd say you could probably, if you raced through it, 15 hours. Really good value AAA game. 15 hours. But the game, as Keza said, you know, there's you have these areas like the Pyramids of Giza and the Vatican City, which are these enormous hub areas where you have your main quest, but also there's loads of tombs and side stuff, which is all about tombs full of traps and exactly the sort of thing you'd get in the film. And those are fully optional, but the upgrades you get from them are absolutely worth doing. Those add hours to your playtime, and interspersed between those huge open areas, of which there are three in the game, there's probably about four just good levels, you know, just like 2 hour long levels that are more linear, bit more like a Tomb Raider game sort of thing, I guess. So 14 hours if you're just there for the cinematic experience, of which about 4 hours is just cutscenes, which you shouldn't skip. And about 30 if you just really want to see everything.
I did it in 20 and I was taking my time.
Aynel, how did you feel about, so Troy Baker, amazing, brilliant video game performer, like, you know, the best CV when it comes to video games, plays Harrison Ford in this, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. How do we feel about that?
What, him just playing Harrison Ford?
Him playing, rather, you know what I mean, rather, because so the character looks like Harrison Ford, but it's not Harrison Ford doing the performance.
It's kind of Harrison Ford with Troy Baker's face. It's kind of uncanny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With his expressions. I found it because every now and then I just see Troy Baker suddenly in Indiana Jones. It must be really cool.
I found it that whenever he smirks, with the lucky hat perk, they've got this great perk that if you die, you can get this upgrade where if you die, you end up on the floor. A bit like Call of Duty when you're downed, the screen goes black and white and you can crawl across the floor. And if you can get to your hat and pick up your hat, there's a little cutscene. He puts his hat back on and it gives you another lease of life and you can go back into the fray. But he does this little smirk to the camera that's very, it's semi Harrison Ford, semi Troy Baker, and I really, really liked it.
But as an idea, Rainer, like should it just be Troy Baker's face?
No, because I like Harrison Ford is too old to do this particular game, to do it justice in the way it needs to do justice. And I think for a lot of people that are picking this game up, a lot of people probably wouldn't even know it is Troy Baker. A lot of people would probably assume it is Harrison Ford because Troy Baker does such a good job, I guess, not impersonating, but like a take on his version of Indiana Jones. And I think it really works. I haven't finished the game. I've only played about 5-6 hours or so, but like, I'm really enjoying it, and it's particularly the cutscenes. The cutscenes are amazing. Machine Games have always been really good with their cutscenes in their video games, particularly the Wolfenstein games. But like, I think this game probably is the closest I've felt to playing like a Deus Ex game in a long time in terms of it makes you feel like you have that freedom to approach objectives how you want to approach them, and it's and 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 I'm like, oh, it's been a while since I felt that in a video game. And so, like, yeah, I'm impressed with it so far.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll finish
He's good. Troy Baker's brilliant as, if you're going to have anyone, then he's the best to do it. I think it's not like a one-note impression. I guess he's limited to that sort of muttery, mumbly Harrison Ford you get. He really suits when Indiana Jones is talking to himself and it's sort of like the five wounds of Christ sort of thing. Whereas he can't really do like a yelling Harrison Ford. So it's almost a bit one note, but you go, I do think the average person, if they're not asking any questions, wouldn't bat an eyelid about the idea that they go, of course it's Harrison Ford. Of course he's come back and done this.
Troy Baker needs, no us pumping his tires up even more because we know of the amazing work he's done in the past. Also, he totally bailed me out once in the most amazing way. I was on the it was the BAFTA Game Awards. We were on the red carpet doing like a live hit into the BBC News, and the guest was supposed to be interviewing just didn't arrive on time, right? Because, fair enough, it's an award ceremony, sometimes they don't turn up. And we were on air in 10 seconds and Troy Baker walks past me and said, "Hi Troy, my name's Stefan from the BBC. You've never met me before, but can you come live on the television with me in 10 seconds?" And like, bang, he was on it.
Wow.
And gave the best interview ever. I was like, "You, sir, are an absolute hero, and one day I must buy you a pint."
And he was in character as the person you were meant to be interviewing
as
well.
Yeah, he did a really great interview.
He didn't even tell him who it was.
He just sensed it. My last thought on this before we wrap up this review is there's been a bit of a break, or maybe there hasn't, but it seemingly for me in terms of stealth games from coming at it from a first person perspective. I know some people have struggled with that. You referred to Dishonored earlier, Keza, and I know you referred to Deus Ex. Glenn, does the first person stealth thing work? Because for a lot of people, for a lot of people, I find that they find that quite difficult, because most of the time when you're in a first person environment, you're just trashing the place, and sort of spatial awareness is not as significant.
Yeah, but part of the game. The benefit you have when playing something third person and stealthy like Uncharted is the camera is over your head, so you can see over the boxes. Whereas in Indiana Jones or Uncharted, if you look up, then someone can see the top of your head. I'd say that plays into the game's hands. The stealth isn't perfect, and it would probably be difficult to 100% an area in full stealth. But that's good because it means you get to get into those fist fights and you get to have a bit of hand-to-hand combat, and it's. I think a problem with Hitman, and I love Hitman, and Indiana Jones reminded me of like a first-person Hitman. The problem with some Hitman games is the moment your cover's blown, the level just turns into an all-out massacre, and you can't really go back into that stealth. And what Indiana Jones allows you to do is if the Nazis that you take on are mostly sort of one-on-one, it's very rare you get surrounded. So once, you can beat up a Nazi in one room, and the people in the next room, their AI is very dumb deliberately, and they won't hear it. So you're able to sort of reset the balance and go back to it. So if you blow your cover, which is going to happen loads, it doesn't actually matter that much. I love Dishonored, and I found it really, really hard. This sort of eases the pressure on you a bit. The first person is great. Weirdly, I think, because a lot of people didn't like the idea of this game being in first person, the game only fails when it turns to third person. I think there's some weird moments when you swing on your rope, when you are climbing something, when you're hanging on a ledge, it switches to third person, and it's really weird. You don't have to do it.
You know, when he climbs up, you could definitely tell he's middle-aged, because the way he scrambles.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I love it. But you go, that's how you'd do it. That's how I get out of the
swimming pool. Why are you showing me
that?
Just
like, I was doing the Leonardo DiCaprio clicking things at the screen. That's how I get out of a swimming pool.
So look, a Metacritic score is 86, so critic clearly agree with Glenn and Keza. So Keza, I'm judging by what you're saying, you're saying this is a, is it a buy now, wait till it's on sale, or don't bother game? I'm guessing you're saying buy now. It's £70. I think it's on the Xbox Game Pass.
It is.
It's on Game Pass, yeah. It's a play now for sure for me. I think, and also it's, it's a really quiet time of year, isn't it? This usually, and but weirdly, in February, there's a million games coming out. So
February.
If you haven't played Indiana Jones yet, before the February glut of a million games.
Absolutely. Okay, so that is the review there of Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Like I said, it's coming out on PS5 in March, or it's on Game Pass, or you can spend £70 and buy it now as well. So we're finishing this episode by, not quite finishing actually, because I've got the answer to that trivia question in a sec, but we're keeping on adding tracks to our Press X Spotify playlist. So this is our collection of the ultimate game soundtracks of all time. What needs to go on there? We've had a couple of suggestions again from our Discord. Demi wants the main theme from Spiritfarer.
Yeah,
I've not heard this.
Spiritfarer's entire soundtrack is lovely.
Okay, well, that's a big thumbs up from Glenn Morphew there, Demi. And then Nate has been suggesting, got to have some of the Man with a Machine Gun from Final Fantasy VIII.
Oh, yeah, I know the one.
Good track. Then producer David wants to add, for better or for worse, from Uncharted 4, which is at the moment where you drive in total silence with Nate and Elena after they had some strong words about Nate lying to her. There's so much unsaid, but we understand so much about their relationship through the music as they drive. So some other suggestions to get onto our Spotify playlist, which is looking banging, Inella, so far, isn't it? I'll tell
you what, it's going to get full. I might have to take a couple hours.
I know, I have to start culling it soon. Kez, have you got anything you want to add to a Spotify playlist?
If it's not already there, which it should be, then Celeste. Basically the entirety of the Celeste soundtrack.
Okay.
That's one of the only ones I own, the Celeste soundtrack.
The Final Climb. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Final Climb from Celeste is going in there.
Minimalist Believe in Yourself electronica.
Sounds right up my street, to be fair. So, because I've listened to the entire album, because we put one song in from Road 96 recently, and I've listened to that whole album now like three or four times.
Road 96 is so good. The songs are wonderful. Very sort of Life is Strange sort of soundtrack. Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. I love Road 96.
And now, earlier on in the show, we set you a trivia question, and that was, in what year was the first video game played in space? And for a bonus point, what was the game? Inel, because Keza looks like Keza looks.
I want to go.
She's got the answer. I'm gonna go with 1981 Space Invaders.
1981 Space Invaders. What are you saying, Keza?
I'm gonna say it was probably Tetris on the Game Boy, which would place it in the late 80s.
So the answer was 1993.
Oh, wow.
The first person to play a game in space was Russian cosmonaut Alexander Serebrov, and he played Tetris on the Game Boy.
Knew it. Apart from anything else, you're not getting anything plugged in up there, are you?
He was playing it on the way to the Mir space station. He played it around orbit of the Earth in July 1993, and that cartridge was sold at auction in 2011 for $1,200.
Wow.
So there we are. Congratulations to everybody who got it right.
It's not like it's got save data run there. Any cartridge, man.
I wonder what his high score was. Anyway, congratulations if you got it right. If you didn't get it right, don't worry, you can try again next week. There'll be more trivia. And that'll be it for this episode of Press X to Continue. Don't forget, you can get involved as well by joining us on social media, Press X Pod on TikTok and Blue Sky, Press X Podcast on Instagram, and if you comment on any of our posts, we will invite you into the Discord server as well. We'd love to have you in there. There's going to be another retro episode of Press X on Thursday, and then we will be back with a fresh episode for you next Tuesday for some more fun. Thank you very much, everybody, for being with us, and we will see you all again very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.